Welcome into Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here. We're going to be taking your questions as always. Send those into us using the hashtag BucksLive. We'll get to those in the final segment. You can send them in throughout the show and all the way into that segment. For now, let's go ahead and take a look back at that Panthers game that was, if nothing, if not entertaining. Man, that was quite a battle. And again, we say this every week, and they're not okay with the idea of moral victories, but the fact that this team continues to fight the way they do, I think is incredibly impressive. And I don't know how many teams would do that, would have the makeup that this team does to continue to do that week in and week out.
So you mean the Panthers game or the Atlanta game or the Detroit
exactly.
game?
Exactly. All of these games. It's
That's
crazy.
That's four straight games, one in overtime, three decided by 3 points, and there was a field goal for one team or the other kind of prominent right at the end. And it's kind of – you know how much these guys care. You see – that they're upset about losing, and you just feel for them. You wish that can't one of these games turn the right way?
Right.
You know,
so any breaks, anything.
All that hard work they're putting into it, and you know, you're leading the Panthers on the road in Week 16, and the Panthers are 10-4, and you're leading them in the fourth quarter with 3 minutes to go, and you know, we didn't get the stop. But I you know, in this one in particular, I refuse to lay this one. Not that anybody cares what I do, where I lay.
I care.
I refuse to lay this one at the feet of the defense because that game shouldn't have been 19-15 at that point. You know, they kept Cam Newton and the Panthers' offense out of the end zone until that last play by Cam. Their only touchdown was on a kickoff return, which the defense didn't have anything to do with. They had been fantastic in the red zone. Carolina only had 255 yards on the day, even after that last drive. They hadn't been able to hit anything downfield. And I know they do a lot of zone reads and short passes now, and so a lot of that's by design, but they didn't hit anything downfield. You know, Cam Newton got out a couple times, but he's going to do that. For the most part, it wasn't anything dramatic. But you're only winning 19-15 because you get in the red zone six times and you get one touchdown out of it.
That's true.
Four field goals and a fumble and then one touchdown. And that's clearly the problem. And I'm not saying anything that everybody in the team doesn't know.
Right.
You should have been winning about, you know, 27-15 at that point.
And so then what did you see as the difference when the defense had been – having such a phenomenal day, and then that last drive, just some big plays. What did you see as the difference? Was it a prevent style type thing that just went wrong?
No, I don't think they were playing a prevent. There was too much time left for that.
Right.
I don't think they were doing that. It was notably to me the first time, like the first two plays of that drive, Cam Newton pushed it down the middle of the field twice and worked and completed it. It was really the first time all day that it happened. I don't know if we were doing something that was keeping them from throwing the ball downfield or if that was just the decision-making they were making throughout the game, but that's the first time they really did that. And so it took them only two plays to get, you know, in our side of the field and quickly. So they had plenty of time to do what they needed to do. They had plenty of time to get inside the 20 or inside the 15 and run a lot of short plays. That's how they got to fourth and, you know, fourth down. So otherwise they would have had to really, you know, take a crack at the end zone sooner, and who knows what happens then.
Right.
So I don't know. Again, that drive wasn't good for our defense, but if you only give up one drive like that the whole game, I can't say that's a bad defensive performance.
It's just unfortunate when that drive
came. We weren't farther ahead.
And right, exactly. That's which is another struggle. So, and looking at the offense of what you saw, again, talking about wishing you're a little bit further ahead, still compared to the 3 points they scored the last time they played them, the offense still, and Jameis had another huge game, two in a row for him. Do you feel like now it's starting to be something where it was these last two games in particular strung together feel like a kind of new step forward for Jameis, or is it still two is not quite enough of the string?
Well, I would say it's four, and I would say my first reaction to this is, you know how there were some people who wondered if it made sense to bring Jameis back at all, and Dirk and Jason Light never wavered. They were like, when he's healthy, he's going to play.
Right.
He's our quarterback. That's what you do. You play your best players.
Right.
And I know we said at the time, so it's not revisionist thinking, that we agreed that was the right thing to do, and it certainly has proven to be true, because don't you feel so much better about Jameis Winston going into the next season after the way he's finishing this one?
Exactly.
Because I'd say it's all four games. Over the last four games, he has a combined passer rating of 114.5. That's the best in the entire NFL.
That's amazing.
He's still – and you know what? His completion percentage in that range is up to like 72-something. So his completion percentage this year has gone up noticeably, like by 5 points, which is a big jump. But it's not because, like in Carolina, let me give you an example. Cam Newton's completion percentage last year was something like 53, and this year it's up to like 61. And he's a great player. whichever number you have. But that's in their case, that's because they have now McCaffrey, and they're throwing a lot of short passes, high percentage passes. Jameis Winston's throwing the same sort of passes, these 15 to 19 yard passes. That's the type of offense that we have. He's not, his yards per attempt and his yards at catch are the same as they were last year, but his completion percentage is up 5%. And the only conclusion you can draw from that is he's become a more accurate passer. And in these last two games in particular, but all four of them, you've really seen that. Maybe as his shoulder feels better and better, he's got more zip on the ball. But that's taking all four together and then combine it with what he was doing before the shoulder injury, I would say we've definitely seen a step forward for Jameis Winston.
That's huge. And then without DeSean Jackson in there, we were wondering how some of these wide receivers were going to step up, who they were going to be, and it looked like it was just a great sign that even without him, that you had Godwin, you had Humphreys, you had other guys stepping in, and that's got to make you feel good about that unit moving forward, to see that all year, no matter who, whether it was Mike missing a game, DeSean missing a game, that, you know, I think that Adam and maybe to some extent Chris didn't get the attention maybe they'd gotten, that the, because you had so much attention on DeSean and Mike and what that would look like. I feel like that had to be kind of a reassuring thing in this game as well.
Well, Adam just kept doing what Adam does. I don't think his role has particularly changed a whole lot, and he does it well. It's Chris Godwin that obviously stepped in the starting lineup, probably took the majority of the snaps that would have gone to DeSean Jackson. Yeah, the fact that you got production out of that spot, even with DeSean not in there. I mean, he had 98 yards. Obviously, a lot of them on one play.
Right.
But that was the kind of play that you envisioned DeSean doing. You know, you run him a post, he catches it, eludes a couple guys and goes 70 yards.
Yeah.
So it's cool that you got another guy that can do that. And you see guys like Freddie Martino, he had a couple important catches.
Yeah.
What he tends to get in the game, like Mike Evans runs a deep route and he's 50 yards down the field and they just bring him off rather than make him run all the way back to the huddle. They bring him off and Freddie Martino's in there for a play. And that's how he gets his playing time a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he can be in there and you can still throw it to him and get a couple big plays out of it. That's, you know, the depth is nice. And Jameis is finding everybody.
Yeah, that's true. And then Peyton Barber had one run in particular that was really beautiful. And you'll be happy to hear that's one of the plays that Anthony Beck broke down in film session. And it was amazing to watch the whole O-line and even Auclair in their blocking that, like, just it, he said it was basically just picture perfect what you want to look like. What did you think about his performance and just the way all the different running backs mixed in there on that Sunday and what maybe this says about Peyton and potentially his future with this team?
Well, I'm glad to hear that play was really blocked perfectly because, you know, that's obviously something that hasn't been going right this year, right? Anthony pointing out that everybody did what they were supposed to do kind of calls into the light that in a lot of plays, if just one guy messes up, it's not going to work, right?
Right.
So Peyton, I didn't see the breakdown, so I'm just sort of vaguely going at it here, but obviously they must have done a good job of opening a hole for him, and I did see on the play how he really seemed to hit that hard quickly, you know, and I think he looks faster and quicker than he did last year. Maybe it's just a matter of understanding the NFL game better or something, but maybe, you know, he's continue to work out and gotten faster and everything. But he looked good on that play. Now, as a whole, our running game wasn't particularly effective, no matter who we had in there. But it really didn't matter a whole lot because Jameis was doing so well. I mean, think about that third down where he threw it over a linebacker and to Mike Evans in front of another guy. And then when we had that sort of disastrous sequence near the goal line in the fourth quarter coming out, and all of a sudden it's third and, I don't know, 18 or whatever. I'm thinking, just throw a screen pass, get us a little more room for a punt. And Jameis is standing in the end zone, steps up, eludes traffic and pressure, and throws a 30-yard pass to Mike Evans. At that point, I kind of thought we were going to win the game.
Yep, I would agree with that.
Because that had taken it down to like, I don't know, 4 or 5 minutes, and we still had possessions, and then we drove across the field, stalled out, unfortunately, had a really long field goal try. But after that catch was probably the most confident I felt the whole game. Obviously, didn't work out.
Yeah, that's true. And then looking at the O-line, we talked a little bit about the running game, but that's a unit that's had to change a lot in recent weeks. How would you evaluate what they were able to do on Sunday?
Well, it was a kind of mixed bag of a game because there were definitely plays where it didn't look like the pass protection was very good. Now, keep in mind, you're playing a team that has both their ends came into this game with 10 sacks, and they have two very good defensive tackles in the middle too. So this is a really hard line for us to defend, and that line won some of the times. But there were a number of other plays where there was pretty darn good protection. I mean, Jameis, you don't throw 21 of 27 if you're constantly being harassed and forced to throw off balance and stuff. So it was a little bit of both. There was a number of plays that looked really good and some that didn't look very good, and I think that's probably to be expected with this reshuffled line.
Okay. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us in this first segment. We still have two more coming your way. One of those is getting to your Twitter questions. You can keep sending those in. Use that hashtag BucksLive. We'll take a short break here and be right back.
nobody's gonna let another man walk in their house and take something from them. So take that to heart. This is personal to me.
Yeah. We call this the jungle, bro. Yeah. It's our house today, man. Yeah. Let's be great, man. Let's go. Let's get it then, man.
Be legendary today. Yeah. Don't forget, this is our house. Yeah. This is our house. Yeah.
Now takes the snap, looks to his right, look, crossing route, throw, caught ball, touchdown, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Hit the backdrop. It's a Lavonte David quarterback sack, his second of the game.
Let's make it count. We're past the 50, okay?
Big Winston looking. James is going to run to the left to the 10. He goes to the inside. Touchdown, Tampa Bay.
Attack, taking, and takeaways. Got it?
It's picked off. Intercepted at the 30, to the 25, to the 20. Quan Alexander will take it to the house. Touchdown, Tampa Bay.
Welcome back to Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here. We're going to take your questions in the final segment. Use that hashtag BucksLive. That's how we'll find those for now. We wanted to turn to the Saints game a little bit. Big matchup here for the final game of the season. We heard that it got flexed. You had to write a story about that. Figured we'd talk about a little bit of why that game. I know we know that the Saints are playing for some things, but I think that I was a little surprised that there are so many 4 o'clock games and that this one would be one of the ones flexed. Mm-hmm. So can you give us a little bit of insight as to why you think that this one was chosen?
Well, first of all, they try to flex games to 4 o'clock in order to put the games that people are going to want at that time slot.
Right.
So that's the baseline, right? That's the whole point of flexing. And when you're in week 17, you're looking for games that have playoff implications. And a lot of divisions have pretty much been decided. A lot of the playoffs have been decided. But the Saints and the Panthers going to that last week with an identical 11-4 records. Carolina will win the division if they win the game against us. But if they lose and Carolina wins, then Carolina wins the division. So what the league wants to avoid is putting. I mean, the Carolina Atlanta game is obviously a marquee game because it's two teams that are in playoff contention.
Right.
Ours only has one team in playoff contention, but you want to avoid those games one being played before the other. So if Carolina played before New Orleans, it would be a big advantage for New Orleans because Carolina would have to play all their starters.
Right.
But if they lost, then New Orleans could know.
Oh, we can sit
people. Rest.
And
if you do it the other way and New Orleans wins, plays all their starters, but knows that they have to because they have to win.
Right.
And then Carolina sees that they win and they have nothing left to play for, then
they can rest people.
So
interesting. I hadn't thought about that.
They needed to be at the same time.
Right.
So essentially the Buccaneers got dragged along when the Carolina game was flexed. And I know some people wish on New Year's Eve Day that game was still at one.
Right.
But, hey, you know, it's fun to be in the spotlight. And
yeah.
A chance for the Buccaneers. One more chance to make an impact on this race. I mean, think about it. We played Detroit. It was a good game. Came down to the wire, like all of them do.
Right.
Detroit was still in playoff contention, really needed the win. Couldn't quite beat them. Green Bay, they were right hanging on. Like, if we'd have beat them, they would have been eliminated that week. They eventually were, overtime. And then it was Atlanta, right? Atlanta. That one came down to the wire.
Yeah, we've had a lot of chances
and
here.
That changed things. And then Carolina. If we had beaten Carolina, if the Buccaneers had beaten Carolina on Sunday, we wouldn't be flexed because New Orleans would already have won the division. So it's just.
That's crazy.
Yeah. There was a number of ways those two games, because New Orleans was playing Atlanta and the Bucs were playing the Panthers, and there was different combinations of results that would have flexed or not flexed the game. And we ended up with the one.
Yeah.
One of the ones that flexed it.
Yeah, that's interesting. So looking at this Saints matchup, first of all, before we even get into the Saints side of things, just overall, what do you feel like the things are that this Bucs team is going to want to accomplish in this game? What do they want to find out? Just even for the idea of going into this offseason on a higher note, what are the things that you think need to happen to really help provide
Well, it sounds simplistic, but they really want to win. I mean, you keep all of these games are so close and you're not getting any of them. And I think what a win would, it wouldn't prove anything, but would make you feel a little bit better is if, like this Carolina game, right? It feels like a huge missed opportunity because they came back and won at the end, and the reason they were able to do so is because there were so many points left on the board. Yeah. So the offense is moving the ball. The defense played very well against Cam Newton, and it didn't have to win because it wasn't a complete game. There were too many fumbles, and there were too many drives that ended in the red zone. So you want to show that you can play a complete game and put all the pieces together, you know, because I watched that game against Carolina, and I got to feel if I was a player, I'd feel like we're as good as that team. They're 11-4, and they're going to the playoffs, but you saw what we just did, right? But it doesn't mean anything unless it ends up in a win.
Right.
Certainly nobody outside this building is going to think that the Buccaneers are as good as the Panthers.
Yeah.
But they probably do, and they'd like to see the result of it.
That's true. Do you think there are any individual players or position groups who have a lot to prove or work on this last game?
One game left. You know, what I would most like to see is this great streak Jameis is on end on another high note. Not the least bit because I have to write about it all the time. And right. It's nice when the numbers really, when you could say, hey, look at this. I mean, like the fact that he has the best pass rating in the NFL over the last month, stuff like that. So I'd like to see that so that arrows continually pointed up on the way out. I mean, if he had another really good game and you looked at that big five-game sample, that'd be something to talk about. But, you know, other guys, otherwise, is there a guy that one game is going to make a big difference for? I probably don't think so.
Okay. So then looking at the actual matchup, from the last time that these two teams met, what are the big things that you think the Bucs probably took away from the film that Sunday and the things that they can apply this week?
Well, there's always changes in the lineup for both teams. Like, we didn't have Brent Grimes that day. That would
That's
probably
a big difference.
A bit,
yeah,
you look at the Saints team and it's incredible because of the running backs, they're two running backs, right? And so it's pretty obvious that you got to stop or try to stop. I don't think anybody's really stopped them all year. Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara. It's not an easy thing to do. I mean, think about this. Alvin Kamara has 1,426 yards from scrimmage this year, which is like eighth in the league. He's second on his own team.
That's not fair.
Mark Ingram has 1,486. So between those two guys, they're going to finish this season with like 3,000 yards and 25 touchdowns between those two guys alone.
That's crazy.
So the Saints offense, when you think of big plays from the Saints offense through the years, you tend to think of that play where, you know, somebody beats somebody down and Breeze throws a perfect deep ball. And it's Brandon Cooks or it's Marcus Colston or Devery Henderson or all these speedsters that they've had. They're getting big plays still, but a lot of it is just getting the ball quickly to Alvin Kamara and letting him run. I mean, Michael Thomas, the receiver, has 98 catches, which is a ton. His average is like 11.7. So they don't have that Brandon Cooks guy, that type,
right,
that's that 70-yard bomb type guy, but it's still working just as well. And so, you know, I'm sure they're thinking about ways to try to stop that. But, I mean, you can't just look at the numbers and assume, well, there's no way the Bucs can stop that. If you looked at the numbers coming into this last week's game, Carolina was leading the league in scoring per game since week 10. Cam Newton was running all over the field. That offense was really clicking, and we held them to 255 yards and one offensive touchdown. So, obviously, Drew Brees, Kamara, Ingram, Michael Thomas, it's a big challenge, but you can't just look at the numbers and assume we can't do it.
So absolutely.
There you go. There's something to look for. Can the Bucs defense finish on a high note?
That's
and
true.
I don't
and
think
finish
it's,
it in
yeah,
the, at the
and
game.
Finish the game.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a coincidence that the defensive effort in week 16 was better than in week 15, considering Gerald McCoy and Levante David came back.
Yeah, that's very true. And Gerald, I mean, getting a sack coming off of that biceps injury, I was incredibly impressed by what he was still able to do. And I don't know what the condition of his arm was, but either he was incredibly tough to fight through some struggles of playing with it, or he's so good that he could get a sack one-armed. I mean, he's just, you know, who knows?
I don't know what – hopefully it means he's feeling okay.
Right.
And it wasn't that bad of an injury after all, because arm and chest injuries, sometimes it's not even a matter of pain tolerance. It's just you can't do it.
Right, yeah.
If you don't have the strength in the arm to get that push you need against the guy, but maybe that just means he's okay.
Yeah,
and
that's
then,
what we can
help
for.
And, of course, Levante had a hamstring, and you never know what to expect out of those.
Those can be a long-term thing,
yeah,
for sure.
So, like Vernon Hargreaves.
Right, yeah, that's really true. And then looking at, finally, we'll kind of go into the next segment a little bit with this, but what do you feel like the Buccaneers' offense is really hoping to do against the Saints' defense? We talked a lot about the Saints' offense, but what about our offense taking them on?
Well, they're going to say every time that you want to establish some sort of running game, because if you consider how well Jameis is playing now, if you could add in a really effective, and I think he's good at it, if you could add in an effective play action, think about what he could do. So
that's true.
The running game has really been up and down and more down than up this year, so that would be nice.
That would be huge. All right, we're going to continue this a little bit in the next segment, and we're going to get to your Twitter questions. Keep sending those in. Use that hashtag BucksLive. We'll take a short break and be right back. Welcome back to Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here. Time for our final segment, which is getting to your Twitter questions. You can continue to send them in throughout the segment. Use that hashtag BucksLive. All right, our first one is wondering about this. They asked a very long question, so I'm going to try and sort of...
characters.
Yeah, I know, right? We're telling the thing here, but it seems like basically what they're asking about is a couple play clock issues of, you know, not getting the snap off in time and maybe seeming to come out of the huddles a little bit slow. And they're wondering if this was a player issue, a coaching issue, a just poor clock management, play calling, all what kind of causes that? Because that hadn't really been a thing we dealt with earlier this year.
If they're the ones I'm thinking about in the game where we had some play, some delay of games, I think that was the players' fault on the field. I think they just didn't – I think they lose – it doesn't happen very often, but when you see that happen, I think they lose track of where they are on the play clock because maybe they were substituting in and it took too long, or they were arguing something with the referee or something. And I can remember one of them clearly because we were all sitting there in the press box watching it, and they're in the huddle, and I said, it's 15 seconds already. And there didn't seem to be a great urgency to get up to the line. And then when I got there, they were just running the play like number, and we're sitting our heads going 3-2. And lots of times the quarterback, when you realize it, is like clapping for the snap, but that never happened, which leads me to believe that they didn't realize, you know, and obviously that's on the quarterback. But I don't think that's anything that's been chronic, you know what I'm saying? But that definitely happened a couple times. I'm sure that they would take the blame for that. I mean, it's not something you want to see, and it was pretty obvious. I don't think it's been a chronic issue, though.
Okay. And then Aaron wanted to know, do you see our player personnel department wanting to do a 2014, like, free agent haul to revamp the lines and maybe even the secondary since we don't know what Grimes is going to want to do?
Yeah, well, I know we wouldn't want to have a 2014 type of haul in terms of how that went because that was like the Anthony Collins, Michael Johnson class, and it didn't go very well. I believe that in the years since, the team has taken a more surgical approach to free agency. Like, if you think of last year, really, really needed a guy. I mean, this is the plan. Really, really wanted a guy that could stretch the field and give you more explosive plays. So, DeSean Jackson. And Chris Baker was the main pickup on defense because they were trying to get bigger and more stout in the middle. Now, whether through the fault of those players or situations or whatever, neither one worked as well as we were feeling through the spring. But I still think that was the approach, and I would expect that to be the approach as well. I don't think – you don't really see that 2014 type of class where we sign like 7 or 8 guys very often at all. It's kind of an anomaly. And when you do that and it's not a normal approach and it doesn't work out very well, it probably makes you a little leery of doing it.
A little
it
hesitant,
again.
Yeah.
Now, also think about the fact that was the first draft class – I mean, that was the first year for Jason Light, and that was before he had had any chance, him and his staff had any chance to draft anything. So they've had 4 drafts since then and had an opportunity to add a lot to the team through the draft. Think about guys like Kendall Beckwith and Quan Alexander and Caleb Beninock and guys down the draft a little bit that have been able to give you a little more depth. So they probably felt they were in, you're changing everything, GM, head coach and everything, and they generally want to make a lot of changes to the roster, not in the exact same position this year.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. Ed Shug Smith wants to know, do you foresee the starters playing the entire game on Sunday, or will the Bucs see what they have in the younger players like Bobo Bulla and practice players like Fleming?
No, I think this coaching staff prefers to play it out with their starters and try to win. I think they want to win. I think they really want to win this game. You've had some opportunities to see Bobo in action a little bit.
Right.
So I think you don't need to throw him out there for 30-second half snaps to prove to yourself what you have in him, I don't think. Riley Bulla, again, I don't think a half of playing time is going to teach you anything in particular that you need to know. So, no, I suspect it'll be starters.
Okay. Adam wanted to know, was the fumble at the end of the game reviewed? Because Jameis obviously seemed to believe that he had it. If it wasn't reviewed, why not?
Now, if I'm not mistaken, all turnovers are automatically reviewed. So, but they don't always say much about it. So my interpretation of those events are when they don't make any kind of announcement that they quickly reviewed it, it was obvious and they went on. Or it was obvious from first look that they weren't going to be able to tell anything. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so they don't make a big announcement about it or anything. So I think by league rules, every turnover has to be reviewed. So I assume it was. It just didn't make it anything public about it.
Okay. That's interesting. John said, who would be your most improved player of the year?
That's a good one. Well, probably Ryan Smith over the course of the year. I know, like, he got his first real opportunity to play a lot in that Minnesota game, and it didn't go very well. But as the season progressed, there were definitely some good games that he had that made you think he really does have a future there playing cornerback for us. Caleb Beninock, maybe. The hard part there is I would not consider myself an expert at grading offensive linemen. So the fact that he got that start in Green Bay at right tackle kind of at the last minute, but then they've stuck with him there, at least tells me they're seeing something that of value there that they can work with. And you know, Jameis has made the expected step forward that you'd want. O.J. Howard, from the beginning of the season to the end, obviously came a much more dynamic weapon. And I asked Coach about that, if it was just the ball finding him more. He says, well, it's both. You know, he's developed as a player, and so now he's creating more opportunities for himself. So that's a good one from the beginning of the season to the end would be O.J. Howard.
I like that. Joseph said, he said, your favorite question is about Buck safeties, going back to the preseason when everyone was asking about that. And then he said, do you think that T.J. Ward was an upgrade over Keith Tandy?
I don't think either of them has played enough for the answer to that to be obvious. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It obviously became Justin Evans as your one main guy, and I think after that, Chris Conte got the most playing time, and for the majority of that time, Ward was splitting time with Conte. So it was really Justin Evans that replaced Keith Tandy, not T.J. Ward. And now here at the end, it's sort of Conte's your one guy, and maybe Ward and Tandy are splitting time a little bit. I don't think there's enough that either one of those two players did that you could say unequivocally one was better than the other.
Okay. Steve, let me see how much time we have. About one more minute. Okay. Steve wanted to know, how do you feel like you would rate our special teams unit now down the stretch when there were some changes earlier in the year?
Yeah. You can't give them an A because of the kickoff return touchdown. And I think Patrick Murray's been wonderful. But I'm sure he would have liked to have hit those 54 and 51 yarders. That's not an easy task.
Yeah, those are not gimmies for sure.
Listen, the guy was, I think he was 18 of 22 so far. So that's good. Those are good numbers. You know, the return game still is relatively right? But like it was last year. The coverage has been pretty good, now this last game notwithstanding. Gave up a blocked punt and another deflected punt, but also blocked a couple kicks this year. It's probably in a B range.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Room
for improvement.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for us on Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Have a great rest of your holiday week, and hope to see a lot of you out there enjoying the new year with us at Raymond James Stadium on Sunday, taking on the Saints.